Blog Talk Radio.
To you, and welcome to today's episode of the A New Day Show. I am your host, Dynamic Daphne, and I miss you guys a couple of episodes because I was having internet problems. So I am so excited to be back with you, and I really, really, really miss you guys. And I'm excited that I am back with you on the air today, Sunday, the 8th of January, 2012. And you know that a few weeks ago, I started working from a book called What's Possible. And so what I wanted to do last week is a kind of New Year's plan and all of that. And because I was on the air, so today I am including it in what I do today. So we are actually going to be talking about what's possible and as well as what are some choices that you're making for you in 2011. I mean in 2012. So before I do that, there are two things I want to share with you because it is really important that as we look into the plan that we want to develop or create for ourselves, there are certain systems that we need to have in place. And I'm going to share with you one of my meditation that I use. I want to share that with you. And afterwards, I want to share from a blog entry from one of my dear friends, Mrs. Yolanda Webb. So I'm going to share with you one of my meditations. I know that I am pure love, I'm pure spirit, that I always have been, and that I always will be. There is inside me a place of confidence and quietness and security. There are all things where all things are known and understood. This is the universal mind of God, of which I am a part and which responds to me as I ask of it. This universal mind knows the answer to all my problems And even now, the answers are speeding their way to me. I didn't struggle for them. I needn't strive for them. When the time comes, the answers will be there. I give my problems to the great mind of God. I let go of them, confident that the correct answers will return to me. When they are needed, through the great law of attraction, everything in life that I need for my work and fulfillment will come to me. It is not necessary that I strain about this, only believe. For in the strength of my belief, my faith will make it so. I see the hand of divine intelligence all about me, in the flower, the tree, the brook, the meadow. I know that the intelligence that created all these things is in me. I know that the intelligence that created all these things is in me and around me, and that I can call upon it for my slightest need. I know that my body is a manifestation of pure spirit, and that spirit is perfect. Therefore, my body is perfect also. I enjoy life, for each day brings a constant demonstration of the power and wonder of the universe and myself. I am confident. I am serene. I am sure. No matter what obstacles or undesirable circumstances crosses my path, I refuse to accept it, for it is naught but illusion. There can be no obstacles or undesirable circumstances to the mind of God, which is in me and around me and serves me now. I am pure spirit. I now want to share with you the blog entry from my good friend Yolanda Webb, and it's entitled Tapping in the Unlimited. Excellence is the unlimited ability to improve the quality of what you have to offer. And that's a quote by Rich Pinto. One of my favorite authors, Yolanda writes, is Ayn Rand. If you have never read The Fountainhead of Atlas Shrugged, you might want to. Why? Rand's physical position has always been that man, we, have unlimited potential, and with that potential, our responsibilities for our own destiny, and that while we can lend a hand to our fellow man, we are never completely responsible for other man's destiny. I know this to be true, she writes. If you don't know the unlimited potential you have within, it will never matter how much someone helps you, gives you, fronts you, in the end, the final result can and will only be determined when you recognize your own unlimited potential. As the weekend winds up to a close, why not think on these things to help you reach your full potential, Miss Webb requests. Number one, realize that your outer world is created by your inner world. Your current results and situations is a reflection of your past thinking. Number two, be aware of your thoughts. We become what we think about. Man is thinking substance. Think only the best in every situation. Number three, forget about competition. Focus on creation. We are all part of our universal consciousness, and its sole purpose is to create more life for all, not less for others. Number four, forget about getting, concentrate on giving. Always focus on what you can give in terms of your time, money, smile, kind words, gesture, and more. Number five, meditate twice a day. Get into alpha brainwave levels and start visualizing what you want in your life. And number six, have faith in yourself and your idea. Never give up. Never let other people's opinion kill your dream. In the words of Ayn Rand, in the name of the best within you, do not sacrifice the worlds of those who are its worst. In the name of the values that keep you alive, do not let your vision of man be distorted by the ugly, the cowardly, the mindless in those who have never achieved his title. Do not lose your knowledge that man's proper estate is an upright posture, an intransigent mind, and a step that travels on limited roads. Do not let your fire go out. Spark by irreplaceable spark. In the hopeless swamps of the approximate, the not quiet, the not yet, the not at all, do not let the hero in your soul perish. In lonely frustration for the life you deserve, but have never been able to reach. Check your road on the nature of your battle. The world you desire can be won. It exists. It's real. It's possible. And most of all, it's yours. I want to thank my friend Yolanda Webb for this powerful, powerful blog entry today, and I'm so honored to share it with each and every one of you, my listeners, today as we talk about what's possible in each of our lives. There are 50 people in this book who, under normal circumstances, the world would look at them and say, oh, pooh, it's over for them. But they're showing us what's possible. And today I'm going to be sharing with you the story beginning with one man that says one step at a time. And this person is Kelly Perkins. Before I go into Kelly's story, I want to remind you about the Vision Weekend Conference that is coming up on March the 23rd through the 26th at the prestigious Broadway Millennium Hotel, located at 145 West 44th Street in New York City. Man, do we have a lineup for you. That weekend is created to be a vision transformation revolution weekend. We have for you Mr. Simon T. Bailey, Brillionaire, and he's going to show you how to release your brilliance. We have Miss Crystal Washington. She is going to teach you how to use social media. She's a marketing and social media strategist. Then we have the positive achiever manager herself, Miss Jan Mullock. We have Mr. Leon Ellis, entrepreneur, inspirational speaker, restaurateur, out of Harlem, New York. We have Dr. C.J. Cohn, who is the CEO of Dominate Your Destiny. We have Mr. Will Cohn, who is a coach, a business coach at Dominate Your Destiny. Then we have from Hawaii, we have Mr. Brian D. Ridgway. And Mr. Ridgway is a transformational teacher and coach. Then we have attorney Ariella Mitchell Durand, and she's going to share with us how to protect our intellectual capital. Then we have another gentleman who is just so savvy on the internet. He is a SEO, search engine optimization guru and specialist, and this young man is Mr. Brian Delaney. Then we have our new media guru, Mr. Stephen Jackson, out of New York City. And then I have Miss Yolanda Webb, who is the editor-in-chief of Elan Couture Magazine, and she's also the CEO of Elan Cosmetics. Then we have Mr. Sam Orme, and Mr. Sam Orme is the CEO and founder of One Voice Worldwide. Then we have Mr. Willie Crawford, and Mr. Crawford is a joint venture guru, and he is also a millionaire, and he's coming there to share with us how to leverage everything that's around us. Then we have coming from Israel, Mr. Kobe Huberman. Mr. Huberman is the CEO of Strategic Landscape. He's also the head of the peace initiative there in Israel. Then we have Mr. Edward Foxworth III. He is a personal productivity strategist out of Detroit. Then we have Mrs. Jennifer Sertle, who is an author and a strategic coach and speaker. She's an executive coach as well, out of Rochester, New York. And then we have Mrs. Chandel Pitts is a design consultant and owner of Black Cat Design out of Virginia. Then we have Mr. James Nemley, and Mr. Nemley is the CEO and founder of the Better Business Builders. And on Monday evenings, you listen to both Jim and I co-hosting Building Your Extraordinary Business radio show, and we are broadcasting it simultaneously to feature one of the speakers from the platform. And our speaker for tomorrow is Dr. C.J. Cohn. I am so honored to be working alongside all of these powerful, world-renowned speakers who are so committed to you and to make a difference into your life. We encourage you to visit www.DaphneClarkHudson.com. We were we were generous enough to extend the early bird registration through the 10th of January. So we encourage you to go to the website, sign up, and take advantage of the early bird registration there. It right now it is $6.97, and after that it's going to go up. So you're actually saving $180. And that registration includes all of the speakers along with for the 4 days, and along with 5 meals, 3 breakfasts and 2 lunches. And then we're going to have the gala, which you can purchase your tickets for in additional. So we look forward to seeing you there at the Vision Weekend Conference 2012 at the prestigious Broadway Millennium Hotel. We are looking forward to seeing you there. And I want to let you know that today's show is brought to you and sponsored by Superfast Link Building.
Superfastlinkbuilding.com. The biggest challenge for business owners and entrepreneurs like you is getting your site to show up on the first page of a Google search. It's been reported that Google often changes their search reporting methods multiple times in the same day. That's why you can't use just any search optimization company. The SEO company that you choose has to think fast and move even faster. At SuperFastLinkBuilding.com, we've designed and developed a unique system to start positioning your site closer to the top. Our complex system of websites and blogs, along with our proprietary algorithms, are pushing our clients' sites to page one every day. Your site will never rise on its own. You've got to do something about it. Subscribe today. SuperFastLinkBuilding.com.
Yes, and we are so excited to have them as our sponsors. And as a matter of fact, they are also our SEO management company for our Vision Weekend Conference. And I tell you, they are amazing. They are phenomenal, phenomenal, phenomenal company. So I encourage you now to be part of the conversation. The chat room is up. The lines are open, 646-915-8166. And we just want to encourage you to just join us, join the conversation. Let's talk about what's possible in your life, as well as I would like to hear from you. What are some of the plans that you are making for yourself today? So I'm so honored and I'm so privileged to be sharing with you what's possible. 50 true stories of people who dared to dream they could make a difference. And today we will begin with the story of Kelly Perkins, heart transplant recipient and mountain climber. I climb some of the best known peaks in the world, and when I do, I bring along climbing gear, food supplies, and the heart of a woman I never met beating inside my chest. I'm the last person who ever expect to need a heart transplant. In the early 1990s, I was living a dream life, married to my college sweetheart, Craig. We both had thriving careers in real estate and shared our passion for the outdoors. I admit it, I was a bit of a health nut. My friends call me Temple Kelly because I was so conscious about what I ate and how I exercise. It was very much a lifestyle for me. So, where the mountain? I grew up in Lake Tahoe, California, where the mountains were practically part of my DNA. From the mountain, we met Craig, and I love to spend all of our free time hiking, backpacking, and climbing. We celebrated our 5th wedding anniversary by backpacking across Europe, hiking mountains in Italy and Switzerland. It was when we got back from the trip that I noticed something wasn't right. I felt rapid heartbeats when I was just sitting still or lying in bed at night. I didn't know if something was wrong, but I knew something about my heart was different. I went to my general practitioner to get a check out, and he practically laughed me out of his office. To be fair, I know I didn't look the picture of a perfectly fit and healthy 30-year-old woman at that visit. My resting heart rate was only 50 beats per minute. Still, I felt like something was wrong. The doctor gave me a card for a local psychiatrist and sent me on my way. About a month later, Craig and I had planned to head up to the mountains for a long weekend with friends. I knew we would be away from phones and any kind of medical care. My gut told me I needed to go back and have the doctor check just one more time. I risked having this doctor think I was cuckoo. I begged him to do one more EKG. The first time, resting heart rate was 200 beats per minute. That's 4 times its normal. Now the doctor was frightened. I was frightened. It was my last moment of normality, because from that point on, my life became one giant medical crisis. The doctor immediately admitted me to the local hospital, where head cardiologists informed me, "We have a serious problem here." At this point, I still thought, I'm the healthiest person I know. They will just give me some kind of pill and I'll be on my way. I even thought there was still a chance Craig and I could make the weekend backpacking trip with our friends. They airlifted me to another Southern California hospital about an hour away. The heart biopsy spilled out a much different story. It showed there was scarring on the surface of my heart, probably caused my varicose that I never realized I'd had. By the time I was in the hospital and doctors were able to look at my heart, the varicose was gone. The damage was done. The doctors focused on trying to put out this fire and get me back to normal. The plan was to hold on long enough for my heart to recover on its own. Instead, I started a 3-year medical and emotional odyssey. The scarring caused my heart to constantly be erratic. For no reason, it would start racing on its own. I had to take a cocktail of drugs, sometimes as many as 28 pills a day. It was no lifestyle at all. My condition only got worse. Finally, after 3 years, I went into congestive heart failure, which meant my other organs were now being compromised because they weren't getting the blood and oxygen they needed. When that happens, things got downhill pretty quickly. Doctors were out of options. Okay, we have a caller, and I know you're hearing, caller. I think I know who it is. If you want to speak, you can touch one and raise your hand, but as you always say, I think you're listening. But I thank you for calling. I think this is my friend Richard. So I'll continue sharing, and I'll keep looking to see if your hand is raised if you want to say something. Doctors were out of option. They told my family, she needs a heart transplant. I was actually very lucky. Some people wait for months and years with no heart ever becoming available. In my case, within 24 hours of my going on the list, a heart became available to me. I learned a little about the donor at the time of the transplant. She was 40 years old from back east. She had been visiting Southern California, where she had a horseback riding accident and died in the hospital. It was such a strange physical sensation to wake up from the operation. I had lived so long with a very weakening heart. Now I had this robust pump pushing fluid through my skinny little veins and arteries. I felt like I was full of too much pressure. I was going to burst any moment. That experience took feeling bloated to a new level. I looked down and saw this scar that seemed way too delicate and insecure for the powerful heart now beating inside me. I was 90 pounds. When I left the hospital with the new heart, I immediately went to work setting new goals for getting strong again. It wasn't too long before I knew that I really wanted to do, get back to the mountains. That would represent reclaiming the old Kelly. My wonderful husband was with me all the way. When I was first diagnosed, I was terrified because I had been taken away from the life that I knew he wanted. But from day one, he insisted this didn't just happen to me. It happened to both of us. We are a team. I know I couldn't have made it through this without Craig. Half Dome in Yosemite National Park was the first mountain I wanted to climb. It's a round mountain that has been cut in half by the forces of nature. I could identify with the symbolism. Even though it was broken, it still stood as tall as the surrounding peaks. 10 months after receiving my new heart, I made it to Half Dome's summit. The first climb set the tone for all the climbs to follow. Each peak Craig and I conquered has purpose and meaning. We climb mountain aspiring in New Zealand to bring attention to organ donation in a country where some of the lowest organ donor rates of the world. We climb Mount Kilimanjaro, the tallest peak on the continent of Africa, and commendated medical milestones that have been achieved since the first heart transplant ever took place in South America in 1967. Then and now, my new heart works at about 70% of what's normal for the average female my age and size. But despite the need to progress more slowly, the effort is worth it. As it says in the favorite poem, I focus on the steps, not the stumble. Somehow my mind, body, and spirit all come together beautifully to propel me to the top of each mountain. The most emotional climb had to be Mount Fuji in 1998. We planned this mission to bring attention to a new law in Japan, making it easier for females to donate the organs of their loved ones. It turned out very special loved one would be joining our tweak. By this time, I had started receiving publicity about my climbs. One Associated Press article was picked up by a newspaper across the country. Back on the Far East, one young woman read the article and started putting pieces of information together. Craig heard the message on her answering machine. I hope this is the right Kelly Perkins, she said. I think you have my mother's heart. I was indeed my donor's daughter. Craig spoke with her and then started the call with her. He knew this would be very emotional information for me to take in. Heart donations are complicated things. They aren't like receiving a kidney or a liver where your donor can still be alive. The fact that I was living meant a 40-year-old woman had lost her life. Because of that emotional burden, I had chosen up to this point to think of this thing beating in my chest as a pump rather than a heart. Yet, here was this woman's daughter, and she had a very unusual request. When the young woman learned of our next trip up Mount Fuji, she asked that we bring along her mother's ashes and scatter them on the top. Of course, we couldn't refuse. We would do anything for this family. Craig is the one who knew of the request and carried the donor's ashes up Mount Fuji. He didn't want me to feel pressured to complete the climb. If I had have any complications on the way. When he made it to the summit, he presented me with the ash and a letter from the donor's daughter. Holding the ashes of the body that once held the heart beating inside me was incredibly emotional and daunting, but it also brought a sense of freedom and belonging, as if the donor family was telling me, I have permission now to own this heart. It told me they are happy with the heart that the heart is. Now, before each climb, we notify the family and talk with them. The donor's daughter feels that her mom is going up those mountains too. At the same time, I feel the heart is truly mine. In so many ways, this is not the life my husband and I planned for ourselves. For instance, we always thought we would have children, and now we can't because of my condition. That could be a huge setback, but we have turned it around. We couldn't do all the work we do toward organ donation if we were focused on raising kids. We simply choose to focus on the positive of what's possible. I'm thankful for this entire experience. Because of it, I live a less trivial life than I otherwise could have. I have appreciation for the extra time I've been given. My purpose now is to give hope to people who are in dire physical situations or who are desperate in any way. I want them to see that there are wonderful gifts around the corner, perhaps different gifts than what they imagine, but wonderful gifts nonetheless. They just need to stay focused and step, not stumble. What an amazing, amazing story. And I'm going to go to my friend Richard on the phone. We have no one in the chat room, but seeing that we are going to be talking about plans and all of that and the choices that we make for 2012, I want to bring, I'm sure this is my friend Richard from Bethel, and I'm going to bring him live. Hello, caller. Your last four digits are 8077. How are you? Is this Richard?
Yes, it is. And Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, my friend, and your family.
Yes, and thank you for all of your inspirational words in 2011. And I have the pleasure of assisting you on Access Cable TV.
Yes.
And it's a pleasure to do so. You're a very amazing woman, and I didn't get a chance to wish you a happy birthday, but happy belated birthday, and
Thank you. All the best
in 2012.
Thank you, Richard. Thank you. And I tell you, you take adding value to a whole different level, because I don't think that words can express my deepest gratitude, not only to you, but to your lovely wife and daughter and granddaughter for just allowing you to do all the things you do, not only to myself, but to so many others at Community Access Channel 23 in Danbury. You are there every day that door opens and you are serving with a smile. So the work that we continue to do is because of your support behind the scenes to us. And people keep watching the shows, and I don't think they know how much work goes on behind the scene. And I want to personally give you thanks for the support you give me on the show.
Well, thank you. It's a labor of love, and I know people listen to you over the airwaves, over the radio, and they've never really had a chance to meet you. Mm-hmm. And I am blessed by the fact that I see you, you know, a couple of times a month live, and and it's really special doing your shows, because I get a lot out of it myself, and I know people that watch you on TV do too. So continue doing the good work and preaching and teaching and doing what you do. And I'm very blessed in knowing you. And
Thank you.
And you do good work. Probably you don't even know what good work that you do, because people don't necessarily call into your show on Access TV. And but however, I know that you touch many, many people, especially on Access TV and Danbury, Bethel, and Richfield. So I'll be looking forward to, in the next couple of weeks and maybe beginning of February, to be on doing your show again.
Yeah, thanks. Before you go, Richard, because I know we decide that today we want to talk about what are some of the choices that we want to make for ourselves. And I know you give so much, but I want you to just step back a little, and I want you to think about this question. In 2012, what do you decide? What choices are you going to take for Richard? Because I know you do for everybody else. You do for the town of Bethel. You do for this committee, that committee, everything. But in 2012, have you thought about what you want to do for Richard?
Well, in the middle of February, I'm going to have an operation on my knee. I'm going to have knee surgery. I'm going to have a knee replacement surgery. I have look forward to that, and I'll be able to walk and be more mobile. That's one of the things, and I think that'll set me in good stead to exercise more. And you know, one thing that I've had with the knee problem is the fact that I have more respect for people that really truly have disabilities, which I never really thought all that much about until I became sort of, you know, immobile a little bit. And so I think, you know, come around the middle of February, I'm going to be looking forward to that. We have there, but you know, I'm putting myself in God's hands and the surgeon's hands, and I think everything will be coming out okay, because I'm pretty optimistic.
You're going to be healed. You're going to be, as they say, brand new second hand, but we know you're going to be brand new first hand. And, you know, all of us, we have to look on what it is that we do for ourselves. And it doesn't have to be a large number of things. But as long as we begin to understand the importance of who we are as people, then we realize in order for us to give of our best always, we must be experiencing our best. I was speaking with a lady a couple weeks ago, and I told her, I said, for years you have been giving from your full cup. I say, I want you to get a dinner plate. I want you to begin to rest your cup in the dinner plate. Start work on having your cup spill over, full to the brim, and spill over. I do not want you to give from your full cup anymore. I want you to begin to give only from your dinner plate. And Richard, I wanted her to get a dinner plate because I wanted her to be able to see the bigger picture, because for years she was protecting the little saucer that the dinner plate, that the cup was resting in, and she was not experiencing any overflow in the saucer. So I wanted to broaden her outlook. And so I'm waiting to hear the feedback she gives to me and see how much she decides to let go. So you know I'm here. I'll be praying for you. You know I'm only a phone call away. You call for any support that you want, because we know that God have a lot for you to do, and he don't want you to be immobile. He doesn't want you not to be experiencing peak health. He wants you to be enjoying the best health that there is.
Yes. Well, thank you for your inspirational words, which...
Thank you so much. And give my love to your wife.
Mm-hmm.
And I will be talking with you soon. I know you're going to continue listening. So I'm going to try and finish one more story from this amazing book, because you know sometimes you're thinking that you have issues and then you listen to other people and you say, oh my heavens, I have it good. So this is an amazing book that I'm sharing from about what's possible. Because a lot of people are sitting down having everything and they complaining why they can't get anything done, and listen to all these people who are doing things. So thank you so much, Richard.
Well, thank you so much, and you have a great rest of the week. And
okay.
I'll be talking to you.
Thank you so much. That was Mr. Richard Merritt, my good friend and number one volunteer out of the Bethel, Connecticut area. So now we are going to continue, and I am sharing Steve Rom, and he is a cancer survivor and a sports writer. And this is the story of the two most unlikely friends you'll ever find. I'm an average-looking white Jewish sports writer. My best friend, Rod Payne, is a 6 foot, 4 inches, 300-pound black Super Bowl champion. This is a story of how we helped each other find new lease on lives. Rod and I met in 2001 in Ann Arbor, Michigan. I was a year or so out of college, starting my sport writing career. Rod had been finishing winning the Super Bowl with the Baltimore Ravens and was fresh into his retirement. More than a dozen surgeries meant his body was done with football. I met him one day while hanging out at the University of Michigan Athletic Department. I thought this would be a great guy to do a story on. Rod had been an MVP while playing at the University of Michigan. He'd been reached the pinnacle of NFL, and now he was adjusting to life after football. He was coming down off the high of his fabulous career, looking for a new purpose. Meanwhile, I was just getting geared up for mine. While, like with most people I'd been written stories about, I figure we'd hang out for a while, I'd write the piece, and then we'd both move on. I wrote that it looked like Rod had found his new calling in broadcasting, since he just started a new gig at the local sports talk radio station. Once the story ran in the newspaper, though, Rod and I continued to hang out with each other. We sure did look like an odd pair. As mismatched as Arnold Schwarzenegger and Danny DeVito, in the movie Twins. We were funny. We were a funny sight. But we found we had an important experience in common. We were both only children of single mothers. Neither one of us had fathers in our lives when we were growing up. Somewhere along the way, Rod had developed a strength and a confidence about himself. Maybe it was his physical presence or his football success, or maybe he was born with it. I, on the other hand, had always been more insecure. I was indefinite loner. It seems like most people in my life never stuck around, and I figure I had to get through any hard times on my own. The second half of 2001 was great. I was pursuing the career I love. I had a wonderful girlfriend, and I enjoyed spending time with my buddy Rod. About 5 months after we met, I went home to Los Angeles to visit my mother, as I did every December. About a week into my trip, I became really sick. I thought it was a severe case of the flu. When I wasn't getting any better, my mom took me to the emergency at the UCLA. Before I knew it, the doctor was standing by my bed telling me I had lymphatic leukemia. Whatever that was, basically, I had too many red blood cells and not enough healthy white blood cells. I had to start chemotherapy immediately. This was like a bad dream. What happened to my great life? I called my boss at the newspaper and told him not to expect me back at work right away. I called my girlfriend, then I called Rod. I was supposed to arrive back in Michigan the next day, and Rod was planning to pick me up at the airport. Don't pick me up tomorrow, I told him with a very bitter and angry tone in my voice. He wanted to know why. You are not going to believe this, I said. I have leukemia. What? This honestly. All I remember from the conversation that time was a fog of intense chemo on morphine. It seems like I went from hanging up the phone to waking up the next day, seeing Rod walk into my hospital room. He must have taken one of the first flights out of Michigan. He looked larger than life. I saw him drop his familiar FNL duffel bag on the white tile floor. Hey, bro, he said, you really knock this out. Let's do this. It was like a dream. As if Rod were all suited up at the base of the tunnel of the University of Michigan Stadium, ready for battle. Only this time, I was his teammate, and leukemia was his opponent. I did a complete 180 as far as my mental outlook. I went from bitter to fired up. Here was the Super Bowl champion trying to build a new life. He had his hosting job at the sports talk radio station, but when he heard his buddy was in trouble, he dropped everything and came. We called it OTO. He was out the door. People now ask him why he dropped everything and came to my side. He says two things. One, he was trained to go out to the call. he was trained to be there for his teammates. And two, he could empathize with 12 surgeons on his battered body. He knew that it was what it was like to fall down and out in the hospital. From there, Rod set up a game plan, a physical one and a mental one. The physical one meant doing whatever needed to be done to get me going, such as wheeling my IV pole to the bathroom. He corrected the doctors when he thought they were paying me enough, when they weren't paying me enough attention. Mentally, he made me see that the best way to face this problem was not to get upset and bitter. He made me see that I couldn't go into the game without my head on straight. He stayed by my bedside until he absolutely had to go back to Michigan. Even then, he was on the phone with daily pep talks. 2 months later, I was in remission, but still facing a bone marrow transplant. This was another low point because I had lost 40 pounds and was getting very frustrated, waiting for bone marrow match. Rod came out again. This time, he was determined to whip me into physical shape. He fixed me food and made me eat it, ordering me around. Like drill sergeant. This is recovery now, he'd bark. You think I want to eat after all my surgeries? Then he slapped down a huge bowl on the table. This is stew, eat it. And he read me the Riot Act about eating in better physical shape. Obviously, you're not going to go to the gym and lift weights. So why don't you try cleaning up your house? When Rod again went back to Michigan, he checked in every day to see how I was doing. I started filling bags with stuff that my mom and I were using and carrying them down 2 flights of stairs from her second floor apartment to the trash bin outside. When I left the hospital, I couldn't even walk on how to use a wheelchair. Now I was walking up and down all these flights of stairs. It was definitely making a difference. I waited in Los Angeles for 3 months until one day I received a call with the sweetest words I've ever heard. We have found a donor. Her name is Annette Kerr. And the donor bank found her in Germany. They shipped her bone marrow to Los Angeles for the transplant. I like to say Rod is my brother and Annette is my sister. The doctors put the new bone marrow in at 3 a.m. on the 4th of May 2002. The transplant was a complete success. After a 3-month recovery to build my immune system, I boarded a plane and finally headed back to Michigan. Guess who was there to pick me up at the airport? That's right, Rod. I've now passed the 5th mark in great health. So doctors tell me that I'm cured. A lot was happening since then, Rod is now married and has a baby girl. He is a high school football coach, which is the perfect job for the leadership skill he honed in on me. I'm just answering somebody here on the show. And I will, in so many ways, we both found that we were looking for. Rod got his new life that gives him purpose and post-football. And I, well, got life after this. Somehow, the sports writing career didn't seem so meaningful. Anyway, now I spent my time telling our stories. I have written a book, and Rod and I do a lot of public speaking. We talk about the power of friendship and the power of facing challenges with your teammates. No matter who or what the opponent is, there's no reason to face it alone. What a powerful story. And Darian's takeaway from this story is, this story reminds me of a couple of important lessons. One, you don't need to overcome every obstacle by yourself. Just like the Joe Crocker song says, it's good to have a little help from my friend. I know for me, it's usually tempting to be strong and think I need to get on my own. But often, when you look up, just as Steve did, that day is the best hospital room. There is also an awesome person willing and wanting to help you over the hump. Sometimes it pays not to be so brave and to let others in. And I have a smile because these two brothers remind me that if you keep an open heart and mind, life can and will deliver your gifts to the most surprising packages. White Jewish sports writer Steve could never have imagined that his best friend would show up in the form of a Super Bowl champion African-American Christian Dynamo. And yet, there was Rod to help save the day. If nothing else, I think this is one of the most powerful questions you can take away from this book. If you let go of a preconceived notion of packaging, what amazing gift might show up as your gift or might already have been there unrecognized. What an amazing, amazing, amazing story. And we are going to take a commercial break, and I'm going to take a couple of phone calls. 646-915-8166. Just give us a call and tell us what are your plans for 2012.
Hello and welcome to Dr. Daphne Clark Husson Radio Hour, and we're glad you're here. Hey, listen, get over to drdaphne.in right now and get your advertisement for only $10 placed on the International Bulletin Board. That's right, for only $10, you can have your message seen by our thousands of listeners. So get over there right now, drdaphne.in. We thank you for listening to the show, and we will continue with it now. Have a great day.
All right, and I want to remind you that the conference is coming up March 23rd to the 26th at the prestigious Broadway Millennium Hotel, located in New York City at 145 West 44th Street. Our speakers are Mr. James Nemley, Mrs. Chandel Pitts, Mrs. Jennifer Sertle, Mr. Edward Foxworth III, Mr. Kobe Huberman, Mr. Willie Crawford, Mr. Sam Orm, Mrs. Yolanda Webb, Mr. Brian Delaney, Mr. Stephen Jackson, Attorney Ariella Mitchell Durant, Mr. Brian D. Ridgway, Mr. William Cohn, Dr. C.J. Cohen, and Mr. Leon Ellis, Miss Jan Mullock, and Miss Crystal Washington. And our keynote speaker will be Mr. Simon T. Bailey. I am your honored founder and guest, host of the Vision Weekend Conference. We encourage you and invite you to be at the Vision Transformation Revolution Weekend, which is going to take place at the Broadway Millennium Hotel in New York City. I want to just share with you a few words from one of our sponsors and speakers.
SuperFastLinkBuilding.com. The biggest challenge for business owners and entrepreneurs like you is getting your site to show up on the first page of a Google search. It's been reported that Google often changes their search reporting methods multiple times in the same day. That's why you can't use just any search optimization company. The SEO company that you choose has to think fast and move even faster. At SuperFastLinkBuilding.com, we've designed and developed a unique system to start positioning your site closer to the top. Our complex system of websites and blogs, along with our proprietary algorithms, are pushing our clients' sites to page one every day. Your site will never rise on its own. You've got to do something about it. Subscribe today. SuperFastLinkBuilding.com.
All right, I think we have enough time to share one more story with you. And this story is the story of Amy Gibson, the bald truth. And this is Amy's story. My life has been a soap opera. No, literally. I've starred in soap operas since I was 13 years old. I've also lived my life soap opera, losing my hair and hiding my secret of baldness throughout my career, never finally lifted the wigs and looked into my heart. I found a way to touch people's hearts more deeply than any acting job could ever provide. If you have watched soap operas over the years, you'd recognize me. I played Lynn Henderson on Love of Life, Alma Anthony on The Young and the Restless, and Colette Francine on General Hospital, and years of different characters on primetime television. I was thriving in a superficial world because, of course, in Hollywood, it's all about your looks. And at home, my father supported me. Supreme importance of a woman's look. He used to say, remember, Amy, if you brush your hair 100 strokes a day, the blood will always go to the follicle and you will always have a healthy head of hair. Hair is a woman's mane. It represents her sexuality. Although I love my father, he is admittedly caught up in the external. I can't blame him for being who he is. My mother was exactly the opposite. For her, it was all about who you were inside and what you brought to the table as a human being. Thank goodness for Mother. I needed her strength and wisdom as my own soap opera began. It was away from the cameras in the studio makeup room where my personal drama started. I was 13 years playing the troubled teen, Lynn Henderson, on Love of Life. At 5:30 in the morning, the hairdresser had me bend my head over and he said, "Whoa, you have got a big bald spot on the back of your head." This man was jokester, so I thought it was some sort of gag. Only this time he wasn't joking. He said, no, you really need to take a look at this. He held up his hand mirror and I saw the missing patch of hair. Stared, flipping outright there in the makeup room. For some reason, I thought losing my hair meant I had leprosy and that my hair was just the first part of my body and would start falling off. But it wasn't leprosy. It was alopecia. That was a word I'd never heard before. I can tell you now that alopecia is basically a technical term used for lust or baldness. In effect, 35 million people a year, women and children included, lust a different things can cause. And there are all different ways of dealing with it. I went to the doctor who told me I need to have cortisone shots injected right into the affected area. I was just barely a teenager and going to secretly for a series of shots. I made sure to breathe in the numerlin spray I made sure to breathe in the numbing spray they use on my head because it blocked out the sounding like Rice Krispies popping in the painless, needleless entry into my scalp. I had those shots for 17 years. The cortisone screwed up my body and my emotion. My weight was up and down, and I didn't enter puberty until after age 17. No medical professional ever said, "What are you doing?" No one ever thought about it. It was just what you did to keep here on stay pretty. I was so afraid that someone would find out I was bald and that I would be ousted from the industry, so I kept quiet and kept getting the shot. Finally, after a turn in my career provided an opportunity to start changing how I looked at my baldness. I was actually in the middle of a career dry spell. I had been a couple of years since I had wrapped up The Young and the Restless. Money was tight, so I was thrilled to get a call from a producer of General Hospital. Not only did they have a job for me, they were creating a fabulous part for an undercover detective named Colette Francine. It took the part. They didn't even test me. They gave me the role. That's when I started freaking out because money was short. I had been skipping the cortisone treatments, and I had a ton of bald spots. But now I really had to get the shots because I only had 8 weeks to go back to some hair. The doctor gave me so much cortisone that when I walked out of the office, I was suddenly seeing double. I even had an anxiety attack when there on the sidewalk, my body was telling me no more. So stop all treatment. And within 3 weeks, all of your hair was gone. I was completely bald. Aside from that, this did to my self-esteem as a young woman. I was panicking that I would lose this job shooting without being in just 5 weeks. As I told you, drama. That's when my mom's words came back to me. Remember, Amy, a woman can move mountains with her mind. I had to turn this situation around. So I came up with a wild idea for a soap character. I would turn this detective into one with 7 different dialects and 7 different looks to her new man. That, of course, meant she would have to wear a number of different wigs. I pitched the idea to the producer and he loved it. Amy, he shekled, this is amazing. The network is going to love it. What made you think of this? He wanted to know. I had no choice. This would be the first time I would share my secret, but he was sensitive and compassionate, so I felt safe to move forward with my plan. And to make this work right, he need the network to pay for $100,000 in real good wigs. The producers stood me and the network invested in the storyline, and it was a success. Still, I kept my secret from almost everyone else. As I looked into the super group and did more research, I realized I wasn't alone. Slowly but surely, I started to share, sometimes in surprising ways. One woman said to me, I really like your hair. Of course, she didn't realize she was admiring my wig. Really, I replied, you can have it because I don't have any. She looked at me dazed and asked, what's that supposed to mean? It means exactly what I said. I didn't have any hair. She replied, I didn't have any either. Now she was the one who surprised me because she was wearing a hat and I saw her hair coming out of the sides. Yes, you do, I insisted. But she took off the hat and her head was completely bald on top. She told me she always wore a hat because she couldn't find a decent wig. Now, I had access to good wig makers, and at the moment, it hit me how difficult it was for a woman who doesn't have $5,000 to $10,000 meant to find a good wig. I asked this woman, where are you getting some support for dealing with your lost here. The next week, I run into someone else with similar problems. Within 3 months, I was inundated with calls from women dealing with baldness. I realized there was a sign all around me. This was the real part I was meant to play. Whew. This is powerful, powerful, powerful. Powerful, powerful. Whew. We are just having an amazing time here. You know, every time you think nothing is possible, you see so much that is possible. And that was how Crown and Glory Enterprise was born. We consulted with women and girls suffering from their loss of hair. Over the years, I have learned how to design top quality costume-made human hair wigs that are designed for comfort, and working with International Hair Goods, Inc., I develop a line of wigs called Amy's Presence at the distribution throughout the United States and internationally. We make all sorts of wigs and all sorts of lifestyle, everything from our swim wig to our intimacy wig. Many are secrets bag has all the goodies you need to keep your wig fresh. For some spontaneous times when you are on the run, I love sharing all the tricks I've learned over the years, but most of all, I love the work I am able to pass on to others. Wow. Next Sunday, we are going to start with Amy Ann Tillman's story. And woo, this is so powerful. I want to remind you, this is the time of the year to begin to think about what's possible in your life and what it is that you're doing for you in 2011. I hope that this segment today has helped you. I see you tomorrow evening at 7 p.m. when we will be broadcasting simultaneously with Building Your Extraordinary Business.
For me, this prayer say this. Thank you for showing me and directing me, hallelujah, to my destiny. I dare you to declare it. Tell the Lord, thank you for showing me, hallelujah, and directing me. Speak to it, my destiny. Come on, you declare it to the Lord. Thank you, Jesus. I speak purpose tonight. Hallelujah. You will open that business and direct it. Hallelujah. To my destiny. I know what I'm here for.